Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 215. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that share, like, comment, and just fans of the show, and I appreciate you doing that for me. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Gym Aware, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only work with sponsors that are companies that I believe in, and Gym Aware is definitely one of those companies. This week, joined by Ryan Horn, known Ryan for quite some time. He's a director of athletic performance at Wake Forest. He's been Tulsa, VCU. He's been Robert Morris, Liberty, James Madison, a bunch of different places. Ryan, appreciate you being on the show, man.
I appreciate you having me. I'm honored. Over 200 episodes for you, so that's quite the contribution to our profession. And I actually hear it. I've seen it for a while, but when I hear that there's been over 200 episodes,
it's crazy, isn't it?
It's awesome. So I thank you for that. And I thank you for what you're doing for the profession and pushing information forward. So
thanks, man. I appreciate that. Well, I went through the laundry list of places that you've been. It's kind of every one of our coaching journeys, right?
But yeah,
which one of those places, kind of best define you as a coach? I mean, where did you really grow up as a coach, and what was the kind of the story behind that?
I mean, that's a really tough question there. You're kind of painting me in the corner a little bit. I'm not going to try to make any of my mentors that took a chance on me upset. But you know what? I've really, to give the most politically correct but honest answer that I can give, I'm really grateful for each stop that I had. Without the first stop with Todd Hammer, I don't get to the second, the third, and the fourth
Great.
Stop. Just like being with Tim Kontos at VCU for, almost 5 years. I mean, that's where I really kind of forged myself as a coach, because when I got there, believe me, I was just a big hunk of steel that really needed to be forged and be
right.
molded and be thrown into the heat, so to speak. And Tim Kontos did that. And then moving from there into Tulsa. So I think as a coach, I was really molded with Coach Hammer and Coach Kontos at those two stops. And then getting to Tulsa, that was my biggest stop from an administrative standpoint with Adam Davis and Rourke Cutchlow. They taught me how to be the boss.
Yeah.
And how to be a leader and how to be a mentor and how to run a tight ship and be administratively sound, be consistent and disciplined with our executions and relentless with our standards. So I think that was a huge stop for me. Then obviously coming to Wake Forest and having the chance to work with Coach Manning the last 5 years, he's made me a better man. He's given me the tools to be a better father and to allow me the freedom to empower and engage me in a way that allows me to be the best coach I can be in these four walls, but also outside of here with my wife and my two kids. So I think that's, you look at, father, you look at a coach, you look at a man along that continuation or that continuum and that journey, so to speak. And all of those stops have been crucial to my development.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's the right attitude to take, because every stop, every opportunity you have, whether or not you agree with where you're at or it was a good experience, a bad experience, you can always learn, and that's the thing that I think
Agreed. The
young coaches that are listening to this, find the good in every possible situation. And and you've been very fortunate to have great teachers along the way, but I think that's also because you allowed yourself to be a great student along the way. And then that goes through that natural progression of being that technician, that manager, and that entrepreneur, and kind of balancing all three of those throughout your career. So no, I appreciate you mentioning that. As you've gone through all those stops and gone through that kind of journey of the technician, manager, entrepreneur, what was maybe the biggest mistake that you made along that way and how you learned from it?
I think when I first started out, of course, back when I knew everything, I had it all figured out. So it seems like the less experience I had, I thought I knew.
That's exactly right.
The more experience that I get, the less I realize I really truly know. But back then, I think my biggest mistake was I was working to impress, not to improve. And when I mentioned that, I thought of it like this. If I write this program, what's James Smith and Buddy Morris and Landon Evans and Brett Bartholomew and Ron McKeefrey, what are they going to think of this program? What are they going to think of the stuff that I'm putting down on paper? What are they going to think about the information that I'm regurgitating to them? And how are they going to, how is that going to reflect on me as a professional and as an individual? But in theory, that was the wrong approach. My program needed to be reflective of what our student athletes needed. It needed to be reflective of our skill set, our staffing, our equipment, our specific unit or team that we were training and providing a service to. So I think early on in my career, that's a big mistake that I made. I spent a lot of time worrying about people outside of who I was actually training and what Louis Simmons might think of our program and so on and so forth. And in reality, that truly wasn't important really at that time. Also, same token, I kind of put myself into a corner with only associating with people that trained the way I trained our kids. So whether, we're Westside Barbell, we're Conjugate, they're doing Olympic lifts and so on and so forth. We created these divisions and it just fractured those relationships even further when in reality there needed to be more collaboration, not so much competition in what we were doing.
Yeah, you know, one of my mentors, Mark Osanovich, would always say that, you know, the longer he was in the profession, you know, he just was learning how to ask the right questions, let alone have all the answers, you know. And
I
used to say that nonstop, and I used to be like that dumb young kid that would say, you know, what is that, you know? And then as I've gone through this journey, it's absolutely proven to be true, and I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you're a guy that, you know, that does a great job. You know, we've talked about this kind of offline before, but, you know, you do a great job of kind of with social media. You use quite a bit of tech and monitoring in your program. What's the, you know, what in you, or when did you make the decision that you were going to kind of stay cutting edge or kind of always be searching for those right solutions and challenging yourself to be ahead of the curve? When did that come and why?
I think I've always been around people that have really inspired me to not only be, I wouldn't say cutting edge, but just catch up to what others are doing and chasing certain things to find ways to better train and prepare and protect our kids. And I've had mentors and sport coaches that have really forced me to step outside of my comfort zone and find better ways, more effective and more efficient ways to make myself a better practitioner, but also to enrich and integrate as many things into our program as seamlessly as possible as we can. So that's where it kind of started. I think Coach Manning has been a coach that, and I've told this story so many times, but I'm going to tell it again. We actually had a kid that collapsed, went into cardiac arrest playing pickup. They were able to resuscitate him. And that motivated Coach Manning to find a way, not only to prepare our kids, but to protect them and to protect their livelihood and moving forward. So I think that was a big turning point in our career. Sometimes it's success, sometimes it's a traumatic event. And that traumatic event inspired not only myself, but Coach Manning to really look at his vision as a coach and how he wanted to prepare and protect his kids. So that's what it is. What we do is reflective of our head coach's vision, buy-in, and support. So we wouldn't have what we have if it wasn't important to him and then he didn't want to listen and use that information to make decisions and make that data, the big data, make it actionable and make it insightful, not only to himself, but also to his staff in those different departments that are kind of, you know, working around our kids on a daily basis. So I think from a technology point, it just made sense. I've been to many conferences along the 10 plus years of my career, and I could sense that those things were starting to come. And if I could make that a better process for our kids, why not? So I think that's what motivated me.
So. Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes it takes events like that to motivate coaches to really kind of see the light. But, you know, at the same time, I think there's a natural curiosity that has to exist for a strength coach to not stay in your own box or just kind of be passed by because you got to continue to ask the questions, is there a better way? You know, and I think that you do that naturally in that quest. You know, you have used quite a bit of technology, but, you know, even like you kind of alluded to with data, you know, there's people can go too far and it can be, you know, away from coaching. I think you've done a really, really nice job of integrating monitoring techniques into your program that have been non-invasive, that have been an add-on to your training. You haven't gotten away from, I mean, you got a sore neck rack in the background. I mean, you lift and you train hard, so HRV and things like that aren't preventing you from training, but they're just giving you some data. How do you, what are you testing and kind of how do you interpret that data so that it, you simplify it for your coaches and your athletes?
Yeah, I think our ecosystem or our process as far as implementing technology or monitoring strategies and intervention strategies is reflective of one, our staff. I'm not in a lab. I'd rather be in a weight room than in a lab. So how I take in information, how we pull it all together is reflective of I'm a coach first, and I'm a coach that happens to use technology within that training process. What we use is reflective of what we've got actionable insight from and what our coach will listen to. So currently right now we use Catapult on court. They don't really necessarily always break in the games. They break in practice. That's the majority of the time they spend. They might play 20 minutes twice a week in the game, but they're practicing over 20 hours a week. And they're training and preparing and doing those things. So when you look at practice, that's a huge piece of the puzzle, especially for basketball, because we're playing the majority of the year. So Catapult to not only track internal load with heart rate monitor straps to look and see what the cardiovascular system's doing, how it's responding to stress and responding to training, but also too from a mechanical, structural, and skeletal standpoint, what type of numbers are we getting off Catapult? How can we use that to better structure and periodize our practice program, but also our training program as well, and be able to have quantifiable benchmarks along that timeline? We keep scoring the games. Let's keep scoring practice from a physiological standpoint. And then moving on to that in the weight room, we use Sparta force plate analysis. So we use Vertex force plates. We have two force plates. Then we use the Sparta analysis. We use their software and their database, and that's also our central athlete management system where we filter in all of our testing data, wellness data, Catapult tracking. That's where we do all our acute chronic load tracking as well, and all that information is plugged into there. So with our force plate scan, we use it to see how our athletes load, explode, and drive. We want to see not only how high they can jump, but not get lost just looking at outputs all the time. Mechanically, how do they express that force and how do they do it? So we look at that as well. We do a single leg balance test, sway balance blindfolded. We do an upper body sway and a single leg landing. So that's kind of our testing battery on the force plate. Then we'll use that force plate information to drive some of our programming decisions. I'm not trying to do more. I'm trying to do less. I'm trying to maximize our players' time. So if I can aim small, miss small, and have an idea of what this specific athlete needs, the longer I'm in this profession, the more stuff I take out.
Yeah, sure.
I'm trying to maximize time, maximize what we're doing to get the greatest result for the least cost possible. So the force plate allows us to do that. Understand that if a guy is force deficient, if he's strong and he has a good base level of maximal strength, but he lacks the ability to take that strength and turn it into a vertical impulse or turn it into expression of power, then we need to spend more time training that. It makes no sense just to keep focusing on that one, quality when we're falling behind another. So in reality, our job is to not create gaps, but fill them and give our, the athletes the physical tools needed. And then also we use GymAware for any type of velocity-based training. So that goes on all our primary lifts and Olympic lifts. So your squats, your benches, your presses, the Olympic lifts, we're tracking those to make sure what we think's getting done and what we're saying getting done is actually the adaptation that's happening. So that only not keeps our athletes accountable, but also keeps our staff accountable to make sure we're as logical and as progressive as we need to be to make sure we're getting the maximum return on our investment from a training perspective. But it's not only for dynamic effort work. Velocity-based training just doesn't mean fast. It also means stuff on the lower end of that spectrum. We're moving at high forces, but also low velocity. So along that continuum, especially for guys that are 7'2" and 5'11", physics matter, mechanics matter.
Exactly.
So you have to use the velocity-based training, especially in season. When you have a nine-month in season, what we hit in June is not going to be reflective in February. So the velocity-based training allows us to have some auto-regulation and some conversations and some dialogue with our athletes to make sure we're hitting the appropriate tonnages, that we're working at the optimal velocity or speed to get the adaptation that we want, and then the athlete's getting the right stimulus and the right signal to get the training retention that they need to get to make sure we're maximizing our training and our performance on the floor. So those are really our biggest tools in our toolbox right now that we're using to drive some of our decision making in the training process itself.
Have you found any really good ways to use that data to, I mean, how are you communicating that data to your athletes? I mean, you're taking all those complex data points and coming back and you're showing your athletes what?
I think what gets seen gets changed. It needs to be performance-based, not punitive-based. So we let them know that all of this information is used so we can protect and prepare you. That's it. That's why we use it. We're not using it so coach can come over and yell at you because your heart rate's lower than everybody else's. Maybe you're just more fit than the other guys. That doesn't really make sense. So one, we need to educate our coaching staff, educate our student athletes of why we're using the information. And then when we go from there, you know, with our head coach, I deal directly with the head coach, our director of sports medicine, our physical therapist, and then our doc. We're coordinating information with those people and our nutritionists on the most frequent basis. And then we're disseminating the information to the assistant coaches and the athletes from there. But it really allows us to get some smoke signals to say, hey, this guy's output's going down, this guy's output's going up. You know, where do we fall within? Hey, he's typically in the top five. From a work rate and load standpoint, now he's in the 6, 7, 8, 9, he's getting towards the bottom range. Why is this happening? Is it a bad day? Do we need to speak with our academic advisor to see if the course loads? We need to be as proactive as we can to make sure that we're just not having these blinders on. And I'm staying in my lane so much that I don't really check blind spots, see what's going on, and then have a common ground with the people that are around us. So right. I think, you know, the tracking creates dialogue. And when you can have dialogue and you can make that dialogue more sticky, and you can have those conversations. You can show athletes progress, and you can show when they're progressing, but also when they're regressing as well. I think you're more powerful and more meaningful with your discussion.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, one of the things that, you know, watching you on social media and you know, just coming and hanging out with you, you know, and talking to you, you know, you do a great job with your athletes in terms of just finding external, you know, types of motivation, whether it be, you know, you putting book quote, you know, deciphering books and putting book quotes up on the screens in the TV, on the TVs, or you even using your social media to stay current with, you know, types of music, you know, that you know your players are going to identify with, or, you know, the whiteboard in your office, even having quotes for your own staff motivation. You know, where does that, you know, where does that come from?
I mean, I think for me, we all need time to reflect and we all need time to think. And I think thinking's important. They call it boredom now, but it used to be called thinking. And I think for me, we're just trying to spark a little bit of maybe inspiration to kind of match up with our discipline. So for me, motivation is just a spark. It sparks something. And then our habits and our behaviors and our action and our discipline and our execution is what allows that fire and that spark continue to burn. So with our athletes, we're trying to create a space and cultivate an environment that's not only conducive to performance, and it's not only conducive to increasing their athletic potential, so to speak, but we want a space for discussion. We want a space for learning. We want a space where guys can be held accountable, that they can be motivated. We want a space that's not situational. I want our guys to really connect with us. I want to make ourselves vulnerable to our guys and understand that we love them so we can lead them, that we care about them, and that we're going to drive them. We're going to be relentlessly positive with them, but we're also going to be unapologetically demanding. And I think those guys need that connection to understand that this is bigger and this will go on way after the ball stops bouncing. Right. And that's gonna stop for most guys sooner than they would like it to. Absolutely. So I think for me, I'm not really looking at it as motivation in a sense. I'm using it to create dialogue. It's a space where we're allowed to have those discussions and then maybe be some information that a guy talked to me about. Now I can bring it to the team in a way that doesn't isolate him, but allows that discussion. So I want that type of dialogue, not only with our athletes, but with our staff as well. I don't want a bunch of kids or a bunch of staff members around me that are just yes men and women. They're going to do exactly what I tell them to do, because I'm not going to grow. Our athletes aren't going to grow. And it's doing them a disservice to not expand and challenge ourselves as coaches, but more importantly, as individuals and as human beings. I really believe that our coaching is reflective of our character. And if you lack integrity, you're going to lack the ability to positively influence those around you. So for me, it's just like, hey, what I'm putting out is the same thing that I'm putting in. Understand that what I'm asking of you it's the same thing that we're doing as a staff and individually. So I think that's where that kind of goes back to. It's just like, they have to see that connection. They have to see and understand that you really, truly care about them. And when they see that, it gets changed. They want to work for you. You know what I mean? But there's a big difference between commitment and compliance.
Yep.
A lot of guys, it's the rule of 15. I heard this. It's the rule of 15. You got five guys at the bottom that don't want anything to do with it. You got five guys in the middle that can go either way. And then you got five guys at the top that are your studs that buy in, that are drinking the Kool-Aid, are going to roll with you. So how can you get those guys to shift towards that top five and get those guys that are go either way and become a thermostat and really change the temp, but also motivate those changes the other 22 hours of the week that they're not, or the day that they're not with you? So I think it's, you know.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. I mean, that's exactly right. And I think what I took in there that I always talk about is, it's not until you're vulnerable with your athletes that you show them that you're a human being and not a robot. You get them to buy into you, you know, and part of that, I think that, you know, is when I give a presentation on this, but one of the things that I say is that you have to include your family, you know, and you do that. I mean, whether your kids are in the weight room, you know, jumping rope or jumping over hurdles or whatever. Or, you know, you're posting that you're going out with, you know, your wife or whatever. I think that, you know, that shows the your athletes, it kind of models how to be a good husband and father, you know, which is, I think it's part of our role as strength coaches as well, a parent or a spouse. And it also, you know, shows them that you're a human being and that, you know, that you got a whole nother life outside of there, just like they have a whole nother life outside of there. Talk about how you're able to keep that kind of work-life balance. How are you able to be so present with your family when you've worked 80 hours a week during the season, you know?
I think for me, it goes back to what we talked about before. It's your principles and your character. For me, it's faith, family, and everything else. And I believe those two things are what grounds me and keeps me focused and directed on what we need to achieve. And I think it goes back to as well with our student athletes and our family. Our family didn't sign up for this. So they support me, but they didn't sign up for it. It's the same token. We say family a lot, like in athletics, break it on family, one, two, three, family. But do we really mean it? Right. And do we understand that, like, you're willing to work with the kids, but are you willing to walk with them? Right. Are you willing to not only work with them when they're in here, but are you going to go on that journey? Are you going to go on that walk with them and help clear the path a little bit to give them the tools to empower, to engage, and to equip them not only to be great point guards and great centers, but to be great men and to be great fathers and to be men that are driven by character and driven by purpose? That type of passion is honest, but that passion's contagious. I want our guys to see me burn. I want them to feel what I value as a coach and what our staff values. And so I think with me, for the family, I don't really necessarily believe in balance, because it's hard, because you're always on. As a coach, you're always thinking like, man, you know, what can I do today? Should we change this? What are we doing in the next block? And we talked about that before we got on. Right. But for me, it's work. It's work-life separation. And when I go home, I'm home.
Yep.
And when I'm a dad, I'm a dad. And I'm present and I'm productive. And sometimes I might fall asleep on the couch. Sometimes, you know, I might be, you know, ooh, man, I don't know if I can make it through tonight. But when I hit that parking lot, my daughter, she's 6 years old. She meets me in the parking lot no matter what. I pull into the driveway. She's running to my truck door. She opens it up for me. And from that moment on, I start my next job.
Right.
And I think that's important to know that. And so they see that. So when you say we're a family, they understand that you truly are a family man, and they understand what family means to you. And like I tell them, it's not situational. It's unconditional. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to make bad choices. We're going to win games. We're going to lose games. But when you walk through those doors, this is reflective of a relationship, and that relationship is going to come before the result. And that's not any type of cliche or anything else, but we spend the most time with these guys than anybody on campus.
Right.
And you have a phenomenal platform to maximize those moments, to not only drive a guy to be a better basketball player, football player, a girl, or whoever it is, but to drive them to be better human beings. And you do that by being honest and reflecting on what you're really projecting. Because at the end, what you project is what's going to reflect back at you. So my athletes and our athletes are a reflection of what we're projecting. They're a reflection of what we tolerate and emphasize. So yeah, you can tell I get a little excited when you talk about that. So I apologize.
Well, no, I'll tell you what, man. It's absolutely I appreciate it, because it's exactly the same thing that I feel, you know. And I think I often say that, you know, there's no such thing as work-life balance, but you know, what does exist, what I think that I've done, I mean, early in my career, it was, you know, it was 80 hours a week at work and 20 hours a week at home or whatever. And the difference is that when I, in those 20 hours, I was 100% present, you know, and, exactly. And as the years have shifted, you know, maybe that percentages have shifted or times of the year shifts. Yeah. But when I am there, then I'm, you know, I try to be super dad. I would try to be super husband and express that. And I think something that you also touched on that I always touch on with my players is that I couldn't stand that when guys would break on family and then, you know, they, you know, let each other get away with something or not hold each other accountable or, you know, whatever. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm thinking back to my family and I'm like, I'm the hardest on my brothers, my sister, you know, I'm the hardest on my kids and my wife. You know, in terms of holding them to a higher standard, you know, and likewise, they should be, if I'm going to say that they're a part of my family and that I'm spending that so much time with them and taking time away from my family and they're that important, then they need to hold me extremely accountable to be out there and searching for the latest trends and
exactly
sure that they're protected and prepared. And I think that you hit the nail right on the head with that. I couldn't agree with you more. Ryan, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
It's not about me. It's not about you. And I've said that numerous times, and I know a lot of people say it, but if you truly do what's in the best interest of those you serve, you'll have a hard time doing wrong. And I truly believe that 100%. So I think what I thought about is, you know, we ask ourselves a lot of times, like, man, what could I do better? Well, if you want to know what you can do better, why don't you look at my guy down on rack 4 and see why he's not succeeding and why he's not getting better? And usually it's reflective of what you need to work on, you know, whether you're not able to reach him or you're not connecting with him, so on and so forth. But for me, it's not about me. It's about the student athletes and the coaches that I serve. And I'm still making myself better. I'm selfless. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about myself and I have a low opinion of myself. What it means is I'm putting the needs of our student athletes at the forefront and trying to take as much of my own ego out of it as possible. Because in the end, you know, without them, we don't exist. And the show would go on. I can get fired today. This thing's still going to go. Right. So I can't take myself too seriously. They're still going to play games. They're still going to practice. So I'm grateful for the platform, why I have it. And I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to use it. But I think that's important to realize that without them, there's no us. So take advantage of it.
What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
I'll be honest with you right now. As soon as I bought Brett Bartholomew's Conscious Coaching, I picked that up. You know, and that to me was a niche that needed to be filled. It was a gap that needed to be filled in our profession. I think we've always been told, just be you, be a supercharged version of yourself. But when you take Brett's book and you start to read it and you start to look at it, you really understand that not only do you need to be you, but you need to be extremely aware. Not only self-aware, but also aware of external factors that you're, you know, like I said before, like what you're projecting is what you're going to reflect back. So that's been a great text. I bought it for our entire staff. So our staff can read it, invest in it, and discuss it. But that I try to focus on that. I dropped everything else. I read that book, and I really enjoyed that a lot. Brett did a great job with that.
You agree.
And I commend him on it.
Absolutely. App, website?
Simply Faster. I've been reading a lot of articles on Simply Faster. They have some, they put out some great content, some content that sometimes, you know, will spark a little bit of growth and discussion. And I enjoy that. I also enjoy they put out a little friction because without friction, there's no fire. And the gym needs to be polished. So I enjoy a little bit, even though that I might not buy into it all the time. I enjoy a little unorthodox way of thinking because I do believe that it challenges us as coaches. So I appreciate that. So Simply Faster puts out a lot of good information.
It's awesome, man. Well, you know, this has been fantastic. And I think that the one of the things that, you know, has always, you know, that I've always appreciated about you is just the identification of similar principles. I mean, you know, faith, family, and everything else, we right in line. And then how you intentionally go about being a part of your players' lives, being a part of your family's lives, and really, not being apologetic about that. I think that that's exactly the way that we need to be as professionals. I think it's exactly the message that we need to send to our athletes and our coaches. And I just truly appreciate that. Truly appreciate you coming on the show, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.